for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Joshua Bell is a multiple Grammy Award-winning violinist, renowned for his work as soloist, chamber musician, and orchestra leader. He's also the recipient of the Lincoln Center's prestigious Avery Fisher Prize. He was just named Instrumentalist of the Year by Musical America. His new CD, At Home with Friends, fulfills a lifelong dream of recording instrumental and vocal duets with an eclectic group of musicians. He joins me here in the studio to talk about the CD, and here is one of the songs from it, My Funny Valentine, with Broadway star Kristen Chenoweth. That was My Funny Valentine with my guest Joshua Bell and Kristen Chenoweth. Good morning to you, Josh. It's good to see you.
Nice to see you, too. Thanks for having me again.
How did you come to choose the artists and the songs you wanted to do?
Well, I found that over the years, I've been touring and making music professionally for about 25 years now. I've just gathered some really great friends in of course in classical music, which is what I do mostly, but in all kinds of other genres, like Kristen Chenoweth, for instance. You just heard, she's one of the most talented people I know, and
we're old
friends, and so she and Sting and Chris Botti and Josh Groban. I realized I have enough friends to make a nice album, of a sort of Josh and Friends album. So I finally got to do it. I've been wanting to do it for
But a while. This one with Kristen had a little bit of an added element in that you and she actually dated for a year.
This is a gossip show. I didn't realize that.
It's not a gossip show, but I just wanted to bring that up.
No, we did many, many years ago, and we've remained friends. So she's just wonderful, and I was so glad that she was able to carve out a little bit of time in her schedule, because her career has gone crazy in the last few years.
But, of course, you were trained in classical music.
Yeah.
So these songs that you selected are somewhat different.
Well, some of them, I try not to categorize. I mean, first of all, classical music, what does that mean exactly? I mean, it covers, spans, 400 years of music and all kinds of different kinds of music within the umbrella of what we call classical music. So it's not much of a jump for a classical musician to play Gershwin or a song like Funny Valentine. It feels very, very normal. There are a few songs on the album where I stretched myself a little bit more than others. Some of the music I've done with Edgar Meyer and his bluegrass friends and my friends, Sam Bush and Mike Marshall and Chris Thiele. I mean, these are some of the great musicians I know, and they've really stretched my abilities to adapt to their style, but it's a great learning experience for me.
When you say they stretched your ability, how do you think doing this album affected your music or your musicianship?
Well, I got to work on this album and in other projects in the past. For instance, Edgar Meyer and I, we did tours before where really it was, Sam Bush, the legendary mandolin player, said he was stretching to meet me sort of halfway. And so we all kind of found common ground. But in an album like this, it's... I got to work with musicians that have a different approach to rhythm, to improvisation, for instance. I mean, as a classical musician, I'm used to preparing everything ahead of time, and working with these guys who are on the spot changing and improvising is so inspiring. And so it's a great experience.
Talk about the Grieg Violin Sonata.
The Grieg. Well, this was quite unusual because my friend on this album, on this song, was actually Sergei Rachmaninoff, who's not alive, so hopefully he's not turning over in his grave. But through new technology called Zempf technology, they actually are able to extract his playing from a duo he did with Chrysler many, many years ago on album. They extracted just the piano part and fed it into a piano where I played with it live in the room. It was like he was sitting there, you know. It was pretty awesome.
Why you chose to put this on this CD?
Well, it was sort of a timing thing. I was putting together the album, and at the very same time, these people that had sort of invented this technology, they came to me and said, "You should really hear what we can do now with this." And it was just as I was doing the album, and I thought, you know what? Why not stick it on? At first, it was sort of tongue in cheek, of course, you know, because this is a friend's album, and Rachmaninoff has been dead for decades, many decades. But when I actually sat down and did it with the dead Rachmaninoff, it was actually really a neat experience. And it's a little bit for fun to put it on here.
You know, I think of Natalie Cole singing with her father, Nat King Cole, after he died. That same technique was used, was it not?
I believe so. Something like that. And on a previous album, I did on my Gershwin album, which I did 10 years ago, I included a piano roll of George Gershwin inside the song. It's fun.
I love it.
We're playing around, you know, with things like that. It was actually kind of eerie though to do this one with Rachmaninoff, because it's not just playing to a playback of a piano roll. This was the piano itself was playing, and the subtlety of what he did really came out. So it was pretty neat.
Josh, how are musical historians 100 years from now going to be able to decipher the reality from the fabrication?
That's a good question.
You know, it's
like photographs today.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can't trust anything
anymore. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is recording anyway is a bit of a lie if you think about it. Or movies are now too. I mean, but that's part of the art form now. Recording what you hear on a recording nowadays, it's not. People are sometimes disappointed when they go hear a live performance because it's not as perfect the way they put it together in a recording.
Joshua Bell is here in the studio. We're talking about his new CD, At Home with Friends. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can also reach us through Facebook and Twitter. I do remember reading about you playing in L'Enfant Plaza here in Washington. Tell us about that, how it came about.
Well, it's almost 3 years ago now, and it's still following me around. When I did it, I didn't expect anyone to be talking about it past the... you know, maybe a week after the publication.
But it was unusual.
But it was Gene Weingarten, the journalist who had ended up winning the Pulitzer Prize for it. He approached me and said, "I need someone to do this for me. I need an artist who generally gets audiences to pay money to hear. I want an artist like that to play in the subway and in the metro station, and I want to see what happens. I want to follow the audience. He followed the audience afterwards and interviewed them, asked them why they stopped or didn't stop, and et cetera. And I played along. I thought it would be fun to do something like that. It was a bit of an adventure for me to take out my violin case in the middle of rush hour in this train station. And surprisingly, I mean, it got a lot of attention. It got spread in every country I've been to since then. It seems to be the first question people ask
me about. Tell me what the reactions were from the people.
Well, people got different things from it. It seemed to have touched some sort of nerve. Different people got different things. I mean, I think the general sentiment that many people came away with was that we ignore things in life that we don't pay attention to what's around us. We live with blinders on, and we don't always see the beauty of what's. I hate to say that because that makes me the beauty in that story. People got that. For me, I got the fact that really something I always knew though is that classical music or any kind of music, serious music, really needs special attention and the right atmosphere and the full concentration of the listener. It's a two-way street there, and you can't throw it at people while they're
running
to work.
Do you think they recognized you?
Recognize me?
Yes. Well,
that was not the purpose of the experiment. It had nothing to do with recognizing me.
Did anybody want to leave you money?
Yeah, they left me some money. I mean, and there was I made $40-some in 40 minutes. It's not that bad.
Joshua Bell, his new CD, At Home with Friends. We'll be hearing more of it throughout the hour. Do join us, 800-433-8850. I look forward to hearing from you. And welcome back. If you've just joined us, the brilliant violinist Joshua Bell is with me in the studio. He has a brand new CD. It's titled At Home with Friends. And indeed, most of this music, I gather, was taped in your Manhattan apartment, is it?
Well, not exactly.
No, not exactly.
It was the title does reflect the kind of evening that I do like to have in my apartment. I enjoy having house concerts, soirees, sort of musical celebrations, you might say, where I invite my friends and people get up and play. And it's the kind of thing I grew up with in my own house. We called them family musicales. And so I do that. And so the title of the album, At Home with Friends, is supposed to reflect that, although we did record most of it in studios.
In studio. Yeah. How do your neighbors feel when you have these musical soirees?
Well, first of all, I actually built a space in Manhattan really with this idea in mind. And I built my apartment from scratch and started with about 8 inches of soundproofing on the floor. And so far, I haven't had any complaints.
Good for you. Here's an email from Matoko, who says, Mr. Bell's influence to young musicians around the world is enormous. I would like to ask what motivated him to become a musician when he was young. What made him decide to pursue a musical career, knowing that pursuing a musical career is sure not easy these days?
Well, of course, for me, it started with my parents. That's where it usually starts. And my parents love music. Although they were psychologists, they weren't professional musicians. They loved music. So by seeing my parents enjoying it, I enjoyed it and watched my mother play the piano, etc. And they got me a violin when I was 4 years old. So I really have them to thank for getting me into it. But once I was in it, I just happened to have amazing teachers. My last important teacher was the great Joseph Gingold, who I went to him when I was 12 years old. And I really hold him responsible for making me want to become a musician professionally, because...
How did he do that?
Well, he made his whole life, he lived and breathed the violin and music. And so being around him at lessons, it's just the incredible joy that he had just by picking up his instrument. You just felt it by, it just rubbed off on his students. And he also made me a better musician in so many ways. And I just suddenly started playing more and started getting paid for playing concerts. And I found, oh my gosh, I am a professional musician before I even really decided it.
Was there ever a point where you doubted that that was the direction in which you wanted to go?
You know, it's kind of a boring answer, but really, no. there really wasn't a time where I didn't. I mean, of course, there are days I didn't want to practice, and
right.
There are days where I feel like, oh God, I think I'm getting worse. Usually, those days, you know, are followed a week later by the biggest improvements, and suddenly, you know, some of your biggest jumps seem to come after the worst low points, you know. So, but never did I think I want to give this up and do something else. Even though I did, you know, I had a lot of other interests. I loved sports as a kid. I played a lot of sports, even competitively a bit, tennis especially. And I loved school and science. If I weren't a musician, I'd probably want to be some kind of scientist in some way. I love physics and math and science. But for me, it was never any doubt that music was what I was best at and what I loved the most.
One of the elements on this CD is a duet for sitar and violin. Tell us about that.
Well, actually, several years ago, I got to meet the wonderful Indian sitar player Anushka Shankar, whose father is the great Ravi Shankar. And I got to meet the family and got to know them. And at a festival a few years ago, Ravi Shankar wanted to write us a piece to play together. Because many years ago, Ravi Shankar and Yehudi Menuhin did an album called East Meets West. And there was... And it really made a big impact. A lot of people heard it, and they had such a great time. And so we repeated one of the pieces they did, but he wrote us a new piece called Variant Moods, and I loved it. So I included that on this album, of course.
This has a different rhythm for you. Tell me what that was like.
Well, it's a different language, really, altogether.
Yes.
The rhythm is quite very complicated
exactly.
rhythms, and though we didn't really get to that part yet in the song, but And also it's a very different experience playing this kind of music harmonically as well, because everything revolves around a more simple harmony. A lot of the variation is in the rhythm, and so it builds, and it's quite exciting to play this sort of music. I mean, I don't try to be an Indian violinist. I can't begin to completely transform, but in a way, that's the fun, is to bring my own take on a different form of music.
Your own take on a different form of music.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be honest. It has to feel like you can't copy. It's like an actor trying to do Hamlet. You know, if he's so concerned about getting the accent just right, and that sometimes you can lose the big picture, and that's what the story is. And it has to feel authentic and honest. So I try to find that place for me. You know, that still feels authentic, yet trying to be as much as possible inside the style of the composer, which is what I basically do in all music, whether it's Bach or Prokofiev. Style changes, but on another level, it still has to be your personal, honest take on the music.
How much are you listening as you're playing?
Well, listening is certainly a major part of making music, and in fact, I mean, when I play, people always remark that my eyes are always closed because.
Yeah. I saw that even here as you were listening.
Oh, that's
your
really?
Eyes were closed.
Well, for me, when I block out, you know, the visual, I can concentrate, and it opens up my hearing just much, much better. So when I'm playing in front of an orchestra and I close my eyes and play, I really feel I can hear all the instruments a lot better. So I'm a very aural person, I think.
Mm. One of the people I had the delight to sit with several years ago was Marvin Hamlisch.
Oh, yes?
And you have a recording here with Marvin Hamlisch of I'll Take Manhattan. Tell me how this came about.
He had written this to this sort of duet of version of I'll Take Manhattan. I'd heard about it. He did it with Glenn Dichterow, the concertmaster of the New York Philharmonic, and they sent me a tape of it, and I thought, oh, this would be perfect, fit perfectly at the end of my album. So of course, it's a classic song, and Marvin Hamlisch is a legend.
There is such a sweet sound to this violin.
Thank you.
Can you talk about what it is that creates that sound of sweetness?
Well, sweet, you know, it's using the word sweet, we use that word because we don't have proper language to describe, you know, the quality of sound. We use sweet and or dark or light, or because we don't have these words that I wish we had a better vocabulary for it. To get the sweet sound like this, a combination of many things. The instrument I play, the sound that you have in your ears, I think almost more important than the instrument itself. And my teacher, Gingold, who I mentioned before, had, I would say, the sweetest sound of any violinist I'd ever heard. And his sound is always sort of there in my ear, and I try to emulate it, whether I think about it consciously or not. And eventually I got myself a Strad, Stradivarius, as he had. He had one made in 1683. Mine was made in 1713. And I've had it now for 8 or 9 years, and it's my constant companion.
Wasn't there a loss at the Strad?
Oh, my violin is kind of famous for having been stolen twice, actually. But most famously, in 1936, it was owned at the time by Huberman. Bronislaw Huberman was one of the great violinists at the time, one of a contemporary of Jascha Heifetz and Kreisler. And he had the Strad called the Gibson Stradivarius. Now I call it the Huberman Strad. And he was playing a concert in Carnegie Hall. He had two violins. He had a Guarneri and a Strad, which would be nice. I wish I was able to have both. I can't afford that quite yet. But he was playing the second half on the Guarneri. He was playing the Franck Sonata. And he left the Strad in his dressing room. And at the end of the concert, his assistant rushed up to him as he was taking bows and said, your Strad is gone. Where is it? And I believe he had to play encores after that, knowing his Stradivarius was missing. Eventually he went back and it just had disappeared, and he never saw the violin again. No one really knew until 50 years later, in 1986, the thief confessed on his deathbed that he had stolen it as a very young man, maybe a 20-year-old man. The thief had taken it for himself. He had snuck in as a fan of Huberman. He kind of convinced the guard to let him go backstage and listen to the concert, and went into his dressing room and stuck it under his coat and
left
without the violin case at all. He just took the thing out into the street and proceeded to play on it for 50 years himself in various gigs, in cafes and Broadway gigs and things like that. He had the Huberman Strad for 50 years.
And then what happened?
Apparently, the way the story goes, that he, on his deathbed, he confessed to his wife, who claims not to have known before, and she then turned in the instrument to the authorities and got some sort of finder's fee of $200,000 or something like that, which is a bit suspicious to me. But so it went back to the insurance company who had paid out 50 years earlier, and then it went to a great violinist, Norbert Breinin, and then eventually to me in 2001.
You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. And we have a great many callers, Joshua. Let's open the phones. First to Plymouth, Michigan. Good morning, Holly. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and you have been a faithful companion to me for many years.
I'm so glad.
Thank you for your program. Mr. Bell, I am an IU alumnus, so I feel a connection to you through Bloomington. Oh. When I heard about today's topic and that this album was inspired by these soirees that you had in your apartment, I thought about two conversations I've had lately. One was with my husband just last week, my husband is from India, and we were discussing how much Indians enjoy making music together casually. So if people get together for dinner, the evening may end with people singing some of their favorite Bollywood songs. We talked about how sad it is that Americans have lost the desire or the interest or the courage, I don't even know how to describe it, but the ability to get together casually.
Yeah.
As non-professional people and enjoy music together.
It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. It is sad that perhaps it doesn't happen as much. I think people retreat to the television these days, and there's that family connection through music doesn't happen as often as it used to. In the 19th century, this was very, very common. In fact, this is the way music was enjoyed most often, not in the concert halls, but at home.
Yeah.
People would learn music. Most everyone was an amateur musician, and they would hack their way through Mozart or Schubert, even if they weren't a great artist, and they would enjoy playing and singing together. And it is a wonderful thing. And there's nothing like being in your house
and enjoying
the music. Exactly. And I invite my friends over. They love it. I mean, my friends prefer hearing me and my friends other friends play at home. Prefer that to going to large concert halls. They say it's a whole different experience.
Holly, thanks for calling to Sheridan, Indiana. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Diane and Joshua.
Hi.
It's a thrill to be on the program here. And Joshua, just a comment about your concert with the Indianapolis Symphony last weekend. It was just fabulous.
Thank you.
I enjoyed all of it. And I had a question about the encore. You played what appeared to be Turkey on the Straw.
It was Yankee Doodle is what it was. Yeah, it was Yankee.
It was a version
of Yankee Doodle, which was written in the 19th century by Henri Vieuxtemps. Vieuxtemps was one of the great violinists just after Paganini, and he came to America and heard Yankee Doodle and wrote a set of variations on it. So I took that and I fooled around with it, made my own sort of take on his take of Yankee Doodle, and I learned it first when I played it for President Obama back in February. So I wanted something Americana, so I learned that piece, and then now I play it as an encore.
Joshua Bell, his new CD is titled At Home with Friends.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day at wallacefoundation.org, by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org, and by the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. This is NPR.
When an irresistible force...
On the next Fresh Air, we celebrate the centennial of the birth of songwriter Johnny Mercer with a concert featuring singer Rebecca Kilgore and pianist Dave Frischberg. Join us.
Something's gotta give, something's gotta give, something's gotta give. And when an irrepressible smile such as yours warms an old...
Welcome back as we enjoy the music of Joshua Bell with his friends. That's his new CD. And we've been playing a few excerpts of some of the cuts from it. I do want to take another call asking about one we played earlier. Norman is in Cleveland, Ohio. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning, both of you. Mr. Bell, it's interesting because during this last bump music, Jean-Luc Ponty is coming through town, here. And my question is, first of all, what you played with Ms. Chenoweth was absolutely beautiful. And my question is, or was your part written?
Oh, was it improvised? No, on these, on all these tracks, it was pretty much all written out. Although in the recording session, we did try different things from take to take, and I would change things here and there. Just starting to feel more and more comfortable with improvisation, but for the most part, it was written out and arranged. But that was really the fun part of this album, was being a part of the arranging process. That's, for me, it's some of the most creative stuff I've gotten to do, is arrange things. I mean, my heroes like Kreisler and Heifetz, they did that all the time, arranged amazing things. And so when I took a piece Regina Spektor, for instance, agreed to play a song with me, and she had a song called Left Hand Song, and I thought, this might work for violin and her. And I had to figure out a way to incorporate the violin and arrange it so that the violin would work with this song, which wasn't intended to be that way. So that it's such a fun challenge. I did the same thing with Eleanor Rigby, which is a song that we all know, but I didn't want to just copy the way they do it, the way we all know it. So I did a kind of Eleanor Rigby fantasy with my pianist friend Frankie Moreno.
How much rehearsing did you do before you recorded this?
Actually, this one was fun because I met Frankie Moreno, who's a rock pianist, really, in Las Vegas. I heard him play at a club and thought he was incredibly talented. And we became friends, and got in a room and just started improvising on Eleanor Rigby. And eventually, an arrangement started forming, and it was just such a fun process. So, you know, plenty of rehearsal, but for an album like this, so much happens in the studio, which is new for me, because when I record Brahms Concerto, I've really planned what I'm going to do before I go in the studio. And this record, a lot changed from the beginning of the session to the end.
Father McKenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near. Look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Died in the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came. Father McKenzie, wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved. All the lonely people, where do they all come from?
Boy, is that intense.
It's a great song. I mean, the original song is such a great song, very classical in so many ways.
Yeah.
So I thought it was fun to kind of turn it into, and this, the middle section is almost like a Hungarian dance.
Yeah, you know, really?
I sort of turned it into that, which is, it's just a fun take on it.
Tell me about the White House and playing there.
It was quite a thrill, certainly. Back in February, I played for the first time for President Obama just after he was elected. This was for Lincoln's birthday at the Ford's Theater, where Lincoln had been shot. So it was quite a poignant sort of moment, you know. Mm. Obama being elected and 200 years after the birth of Abraham Lincoln. So that was an amazing experience. And then I was invited to play at the White House just recently during a classical concert that they had there. I'm happy to see that they're putting on their own concerts at home at the White House, a tradition that goes back a very long time. And I'm glad that they're carrying that on at the White House. It's a wonderful thing.
Did it feel different from playing at the Kennedy Center?
Well, playing at the being at the White House and with the president sitting 3 feet in front of you in the front row center is a bit daunting, but it was a small room in the East Room. A different sort of experience. I love the Kennedy Center. I'm playing there this week, and it's like home for me to play at the Kennedy Center. It was a little bit more scary to play at the White House, actually.
Yeah,
because it's the unknown. It's not what I'm used to, I enjoyed myself, and I got to meet him again, briefly. I admire him a lot. And
anything like stage fright?
Oh, I get stage fright every time to various degrees. I've learned to live with it. In fact, I learned to use it. I enjoy it, actually.
Incorporating it.
Yeah, because it gives you energy and kind of adds an excitement. Sometimes, if it's something I've never done before, it's a new piece and I'm worried about memorization, things, that's not so fun. I'm happy when the first concert's over and then I can start really enjoying myself after the first ones through. But basically, I would be sad if stage fright disappeared altogether. It probably would mean it's time to quit.
Let's go to Fanny, who's in Birmingham, Alabama. You're on the air, Fanny.
Thank you so much. Excuse me. I got choked up listening to that music. So wonderful. Well, I thank you for your program. I listen to you every morning. I thank Joshua Bell. I originally called you to say thank you because when you came out with the album, or I should say the CD, Romance of the Violin, I heard it on NPR one morning, and my husband was seriously ill and dying, and the music just made me relax, so I immediately ordered it. And that was the only thing that helped me to sleep at night, because I would put it on my little CD player, and I would relax and be able to sleep for a couple of hours.
That's a very nice compliment. I mean, it's very touching to hear things like that. I mean, music just, I think, provides something very special for a lot of people, for me included, obviously. I've had many people actually, over the years tell me similar things, thank you for, people telling me while they were going through chemotherapy or while their mother was dying, they listened to the, I mean, it's, when I hear something like that, it's just nothing more moving. And just music does that. I mean, I think people use music as therapy a lot.
Indeed.
And it provides something that nothing else can.
Fanny, I'm so sorry about your husband.
Yes, I'm sorry too.
But I'm awfully glad that Joshua Bell's music helped. There's a track on here with the music from Cinema Paradiso.
Thank you. Ossine miei occhi per un giorno vedresti la bellezza che piena d'allegria io trovo dentro gli occhi tuoi ignaro se magia o realtà. Se tu fossi nel mio cuore per un giorno potresti avere un'idea di ciò che sento.
And of course, that is the lovely voice of Josh Groban.
Yes.
Playing, singing with your gorgeous fireman.
Thanks. Yeah, Josh Groban is an old friend of mine now. It's been about 6 or 7 years we've been friends, and he invited me onto his album many years ago. So now he's returned the favor, and he's wonderful, and he has a huge fan base. And something I've noticed by playing with him and recording on his last album, I get people coming to my concerts at the Kennedy Center or Carnegie Hall who have never been to a classical concert before, who are fans of Josh Groban's, and they come back and say, you know, we heard you on Josh's album, and now we're buying Beethoven CDs and coming to classical concert thanks to you. So when that happens, it makes me very, very happy. Sometimes this sort of collaborations across genres can introduce people who don't know how to get into classical music.
And perhaps the two of you together should have a concert performance.
Yes, Josh and Josh.
Josh and Josh, indeed.
That's a good idea.
The two Joshes. And here's a note from MCC who says, loving the topic today, we often have guitar pulls, which are potluck dinners, and then everyone sits around the table, plays their latest or favorite song, and it goes on until everyone is exhausted. It's the best kind of gathering of friends who share music, food, and fellowship.
Beautiful. That'd
be lovely. And you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. And let's take one final call in Fulton, Missouri. Good morning, Todd. You're on the air.
Hi, Joshua. I just want to say how much I cherish your performances and how much I've enjoyed this interview and the insight it's provided to you as a performer.
Thank you.
I'm real curious to who you feel are today's most inspirational and your favorite conductors to perform with.
Favorite, sorry?
Conductors.
Conductors. Oh, my gosh. Let's see, which ones might be listening? These sort of questions are very hard to... There are so many. They're all my friends, and so it's hard to say choose, but I've just been looking at the posters here in D.C., of the new music director, Christoph Eschenbach, is just about to join the orchestra here and at the National Symphony. He's one of my favorite. There's David Zinman and Zubin Mehta, and there's so many great conductors, so it's very hard to say my favorite.
And one last selection from this album, this with Regina Spektor.
Thank you. trying to crawl into a hole, than trying to crawl out of that hole.
Joshua Bell, thank you so much for being here. It was so good to see you again.
It's great seeing you again. Thanks for having me today.
And the new CD is titled At Home with Friends. I've loved every minute. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information.